John, how you doing? What planet do you feel like you're on?
Oh, I'm doing well, Matt. I'm glad we could connect. We were having a few issues doing it over the computer, but thank you for calling the hotel room. It's been crazy. I mean, I've been listening to you guys for a little while now, and it was nice to hear some baseball talk a little bit there, but it's wild, man. Last time we were here in September, obviously, we were catering to a Middle Eastern audience in pay-per-view window, right? So instead, this time around, we were catering to a North American audience. So I cracked a mic at 2 a.m. The pay-per-view was at 6 a.m. We've tried our best to stay on U.S. time, but I think I'm going to pay for it Wednesday night, if I'm being honest. My body wants to sleep right now, and instead I have 15 fighter meetings coming up at the top of the hour.
Oh, that's, I, we're like, we have to wake up early 1 week to do this show, and it's like, oh man, what a grind it is for us. This is so difficult it is for us. We won't complain anymore, John, for you. Like, that's the end of us complaining about waking up a couple of hours earlier. It's now the John Hannock rule. So,
I mean, my
complaints
fall on deaf ears. I'm certainly not an athlete who was charged with quarantining in his room for 48 hours, you know, prior to fight week. So there have been a lot of variables, a lot of hurdles that certainly don't accompany your normal UFC fight week. But I got to say, if you ever get a chance to come to this part of the world, I mean, world class doesn't even begin to describe it. Everything is just so buttoned up, especially in this climate, that this has to be the safest place in the world to be holding a sporting event right now.
So I don't know how much of the conversation that you heard just before you came on that we were having about Kamaru Usman, which is just simply the argument is this, is there's just no question about his dominance anymore. He's now tied a fight-winning streak with Georges St-Pierre, the greatest welterweight of all time, that by the end of this, if Kamaru Usman keeps going the way that he's going, you know, he's going to clear out that weight division, like that weight class, the same way that GSP did. And, you know, 3-4 years from now, we could end up having a conversation that's like, yeah, Kamaru Usman was the greater welterweight than the Georges St-Pierre. Like, that's all on the table. And yet, when it comes to the interest from casual fans, I don't want to say it was a missed opportunity, but I don't think that maybe, do you feel as though that was the kind of fight that won Kamaru Usman fans and that will, you know, create more pay-per-view buys, say, for the Gilbert Burns fight?
No, I mean, I think he set it up beautifully. I don't think this is going to help his cause necessarily. I think he will get some of the shine from the Masvidal fan base, at least seeing him perform, and some will appreciate and recognize that dominance. But Georges St-Pierre made the takedown a thing of beauty. I mean, go watch his fight against Thiago Alves. He had the crowd eating out of his hand with his MMA wrestling, and that was not in Canada, you know? So for Kamaru Usman, I do think there has to be a focus on finishing instincts and trying to be more offensive, especially in grappling situations, because if he could really round out a few chokes in his arsenal, I think it would make him all that much more potent. But it's a tricky thing, too, because Masvidal got all the credit for accepting this fight on short notice, and Kamaru got none of it. You know, Kamaru Usman thought the fight was off. He put on 8 pounds. He cracked a Bud Light, and just when he was about to take a sip, he was told there was another fight. So it was a grueling weight cut for him, too. His mental fortitude is on another level. I mean, truly one of the mentally toughest athletes that I've ever come across, but it's tricky because it's prize fighting. It is the entertainment business a little bit, but I guess the old school sports fan in me would close in saying winning is priority number one. He's 12-0 in the UFC, and anytime your name is alongside Georges St-Pierre, you're doing something right. So I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth a little bit, but I do feel a little bit badly for a guy that you can win, be so dominant, and yet there's all this, you know, venom from fans.
No, I feel the same conflict, and I don't like seeing venom go his way, and I do think it is you're right, there is an unfairness level to, well, you know, he beat Masvidal, who's on 6 days' notice, and yet there is no consideration for a guy who, yeah, despite having a fight camp, you know, was going into it with a completely different strategy, and of course he would have been going into it with a completely different game plan for Burns than he would for Masvidal. So, yeah, there is that, but you're right that with Georges St-Pierre, the wrestling and the takedowns were dominant. And the thing about Kamaru Usman is that he's unbelievably strong, but there doesn't seem to be one thing about him that's like his signature thing outside of maybe his strength and his conditioning. Like, I don't think of like, oh, that's the signature move that he does, or, you know, it's his submission skills, it's his striking, it's his wrestling. He's a very, very well-rounded fighter, but if you're talking to me about like all the champions in every single weight class in the UFC, men's and women's, right now, he's just not the guy that I think is going to sell pay-per-views in the way that basically every single one of them would. And then the other guy who I think he should be the champion based on the fight that he put together. I know that, You know, your partner, Michael Bisping, felt the same way, was Max Holloway. His first two rounds were dominant. The next three, you could say, went to Volkanovski, but Dana was upset about it. The UFC community was upset about it. We don't need to go into, like, whether or not it was the right call. You can weigh in on it. I just think that the most interesting question now is what you do with Max Holloway, who is one of the sport's most compelling stars, a guy that everybody loves, puts together entertaining fights. He feels a little bit like he's in no man's land to me. Like, what happens next for Max?
Well, I think, and again, you set it up well, I don't think he's in no man's land because he's got five UFC belts at home, his future's in the UFC Hall of Fame, and maybe unlike Kamaru Usman, I do think he pushes the pay-per-view needle a little bit. As far as the fight's concerned, you know, I did think Max Holloway won the first three rounds, but you guys know we have myriad examples of these title fights over 25 minutes that are really close, and they sort of swing on a 90-second span in the middle of round three, and unfortunately for Max, two of the three judges thought that Volkanovski got more done in those 2 minutes of the fight. But yes, I mean, Max made a lot of progress, a lot of adjustments. He fought masterfully over 10 minutes. And we talked a lot about the narrative of the four title fights for him over that calendar year from December of 2018 to December of 2019. And I think it just beat the kid up. So he was definitely refreshed mentally, physically, emotionally. I don't know that you can do a trilogy when you're staring at 2-0 on one side right now. But I do think Max is going to find himself in a main event in a title eliminator against one of these featherweight contenders. And I think that will give him the platform upon which to earn another title fight. But we see it so often in this sport. And, you know, Max thought he won both fights. You know, he turned it on late in the first meeting with Volkanovski. He wasn't able to do so in the second meeting, and he paid for it. But as much as I love Volkanovski and as incredible as he is, 19 consecutive wins, after the fight, he didn't look like a man who thought his hand was going to be raised.
Yeah, no, I think that's the right assessment. So now bantamweight is just incredibly, incredibly interesting because Cejudo's not there. We have Aljamain Sterling, who just came off of his incredible finish. Piotr Jan just, you know, skyrocketed. If there's a big winner from this card, I think it's him in terms of the biggest winner from a PR standpoint or a fan base standpoint. He made a lot of fans in that fight. Cody Garbrandt's in that division. Marlon Moraes is in that division. Like, all of a sudden, that thing is just so incredibly stacked. There's all these different matchups. Do you think that this is leading towards Aljamain Sterling and then you skip, right? Like, the UFC eventually figures something out with Cejudo for a return, that there's enough star power here now that this is now going to become an eventuality?
Yeah, I mean, I texted Triple C, the martial artist soon to be known or perhaps to be known in the future at C4. I said, this sport in this division is better with you in it. So we'll see if eventually he takes the bait and does return. I think the UFC is sort of in an interesting conundrum because Piotr Jan, I mean, this Russian boxer, 27 years old, he's an undisputed world champion. His style is unbelievable, right? He's one of the more watchable guys on the roster. And I didn't call a lot of his early UFC fights because they were international or maybe on smaller shows. So I only recently got to see this guy fight live for the first time against Uriah Faber. And, you know, I'll try not to cuss, but I mean, holy smokes, this guy. He's just incredible, has that guard high, but everything he throws is hard and fast and educated. The tricky thing, though, in terms of the conundrum, is that Aljamain Sterling is the human backpack. He's also the number one contender and stylistically presents the toughest challenge for Piotr Jan. Now, I think Aljo has all the tools to be a superstar for one reason or another. I don't think he's resonated with the fan base the way Piotr Jan has, despite what Jan is dealing with in terms of the language barrier. But I think perhaps that gives Dana White some pause because I think he'd rather have a knockout artist and an exciting striker like Piotr Jan as a champion, you know? And I don't mean to put the boss's, you know, words in his mouth necessarily, but I do think that that's part of the navigation right now. And they also did make a fight in Kazakhstan, a main event between Piotr Jan and Marlon Moraes that went by the boards because of COVID-19. So I think it's going to be Marlon or Aljo, but Aljo, in terms of his credentials, certainly deserves this opportunity.